Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today on this lovely Friday in September. For ISU football fans, Saturday will be a big day when ISU plays Iowa at Jack Trice Stadium. So be ready for traffic jams starting in the morning once tailgating gets going on that day. And next week on Tuesday, September 12th, don't forget to vote in the local school board elections for whatever community you live in. In Ames, there are four candidates running for three seats on the school board. With changes in collective bargaining passed by the last legislature, there's never been a more important time to pay attention to your local school board elections. And a heads up for folks who will be going to vote on Tuesday, there's a levy, a physical plant and equipment levy called PPEL, that appears first if you're voting on one of the machines. And that's been confusing for a few people who've gone and done early voting. But that's a levy that gets renewed every 10 years or not as people vote. But people are kind of surprised by it because they think they're just voting for the candidates. But there's actually this levy that appears first on the voting machine screens, and then you have to go further to vote for the candidates. So don't be confused by that. There's info on where to vote and all that information on Story County website, and you can vote early. So you can vote today or Monday or on actual election day, Tuesday, for school board elections. We have a great lineup of stories for you today on Local Talk. Later in the show, we'll hear from a team from the College of Engineering at ISU whose solar car that they designed and built is entered in an international competition in Australia. And in our final segment, we'll be joined by Mary Rankin, the Director of Sustainability at ISU, and some guests that she'll be bringing along to tell us about a harvest fest and a food festival that are both coming up. But first, it's Friday, and so it's time for our weekly news roundup. There's so much going on in national news this week that it's easy to miss what's happening locally. But fear not, Dennis Hart is here to tell us about this week's local news. Dennis gleans news from a variety of local sources throughout the area and brings it to us live each Friday morning on Local Talk. Thanks for being here, Dennis.
Gail, good morning. There was a lot to glean this week, so I'll get right into it because we have a loaded show this morning. The big story in Tuesday's Ames Tribune was a preview of something that happened last night. The new Edwards Elementary School hosted a blast to the past when the school district, with the help of the Historical Society, opened the time capsule that was stored inside the cornerstone of the old Edwards Elementary. The informal ceremony, which was an ice cream social as well, took almost 66 years to take place because the cornerstone was laid on September 13th, 1951, about a year before the building at 3622 Woodland Street opened up. Earlier this summer, of course, crews began to demolish the building and remove the cornerstone, which features a hard-to-miss 1951 description. What was inside the cornerstone when they opened it up last night? Well, a bunch of paperwork, the equivalent of the surface of a disorganized superintendent's desk shoved inside a stone that sat dormant for more than 65 years. Among the things they found, some paperwork, documentary material from 1951, an annual report on the school district featuring financial reports as of July 1st, enrollment statistics dated September 10th, building plans with an exciting title, The Board of Education Presents Plans for the Necessary Enlargement and Improvement of Our School System, and notes from the September 10th school board meeting, 1951. They opened it last night. On Wednesday, the big story in the Tribune, the Story County Board of Supervisors taken its next step toward closing the West 190th Street Bridge that travels over Squaw Creek north of Ames. The board voted unanimously to approve the first reading of the bridge closing resolution, scheduling final approval of the closure for next week's meeting. Now, if it's approved, the bridge would close the same day a smaller bridge on West 190th to the east of Squaw Creek reopens after construction. Now, at last week's meeting, the supervisors first expressed their desire to close the bridge to vehicle traffic, which spans the creek between 505th and 510th Avenue. The problem with the bridge could be susceptible to flooding if a major rain event occurred, and one likely will at some point in the future, and enough water could even destroy the bridge. Replacing it could cost millions of dollars. So the Board of Supervisors will likely take final action on that next week. Also Wednesday in the Tribune, Ames Police and the Story County Sheriff's Office looking into a string of unusual burglaries in Ames and Gilbert, in which they say suspects stole jewelry that in some cases is valued at more than $30,000. Police Sergeant Mike Arkovich says the first incidents occurred August 26th on Cochran Parkway in West Ames. Residents reported their home was broken into, $36,000 in jewelry and cash stolen. Total amount taken in another burglary was not listed, but Arkovich said $20,000 in gold and silver jewelry was stolen during one of those three incidents. In all of the incidents, the victims' homes had their doors kicked in. Enough information there, enough of a problem to make the Ames Tribune a big story. Also on Wednesday, candidates in the Ames School Board election, which Gail was referring to, took part in a forum sponsored by the Ames Progressive Alliance. It took place at the library, and those questioners, well, they were not short on variety. They asked a variety of questions ranging from bicycle safety to sex education. About 150 people were inside the Farwell T. Brown Auditorium at the library. They listened, they applauded, and they laughed as the four candidates on the ballot, incumbent Tim Rasmussen, Gina Perez, Jeanette Colton, and Monique Binkin, answered the questions during the 90-minute event. Half of those questions came from groups the APA invited to take part, while the rest came from the audience. The questions mainly centered on the Ames Community School District policy involving aiding students in preventing bullying, easing racial disparities, and protecting immigrant students. Another candidate forum on Wednesday night. On Thursday, major story in the Tribune. An Ames Police Department spokesman saying that the white supremacist sticker placed on a campaign sign for one of those school board candidates, Monique Binkin, over the weekend, might not have been directed at her. We don't believe the sticker had to deal with the sign, Commander Jeff Huff says. We think it was directed at the homeowner. The 24th Street homeowner declined to comment on the incident when reached by the Tribune. Now, on Sunday, Binkin wrote on her campaign Facebook page that one of her campaign signs had been defaced by a sticker that showed what appeared to be a deconstructed swastika, and there were some sayings on the sign. The investigation into the sticker, still in its early stages, police say, and they're looking to speak to anyone who might have information on who could have done it. He's encouraging, Commander Huff is, the public to stay vigilant and observant. Posters with the same deconstructed swastika symbol were found around Iowa State's campus in October of last year. And perhaps, coincidentally, police say, they found a white nationalist flyer stuck to a sign at Birch Hall, a residence hall on campus, this past Tuesday. Chief Michael Newton said police only found one sign, but also received reports of others around campus. Mayor Ann Campbell released a statement to the Ames Tribune in regards to all of this. She said, "We are appalled to learn that evidence of white nationalism has raised its ugly and hurtful head here in Ames. This is not who we are as a community," she wrote in the Tribune. "I call on every resident of Ames to remind ourselves that we welcome people of all ethnicities, religious faiths, and religious backgrounds. Hate," she says, "has no home here." Also on Thursday in the Tribune, residents of the Colo Nesco Community School District debated Wednesday night whether to pass a multi-million dollar bond in a conversation that touched on the district's long-term sustainability. About 50 people attended the last of three informational sessions on the district's proposal for an $11 million bond issue. The election is on Tuesday, as all school board elections are in the state of Iowa. Also Thursday in the Tribune, in the wake of the Trump administration's announcement to begin rescinding the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, or DACA, the school district in Ames released a statement to address the negative impact this decision will have on students and their families. "The Ames schools are designed to provide quality education for all young people who enter our doors," the statement said. "We are inclusive. We are welcoming, equitable, and caring for all students regardless of immigration status." Earlier in the week, Iowa State Interim President Benjamin Allen issued a statement that said DACA has been a positive force for the university, and ISU officials will work with national higher education lobbying groups to push for stability for students living in the U.S. under the program. Also Thursday in the Tribune, Iowa State University, good news, has been named an Innovation Core Site by the National Science Foundation, giving it more resources to bring research to the mass market. The NSF program is designed to train faculty and students on how to start and develop a business, with the goal of getting them out of academia and into their own companies. There are about 50 other universities across the U.S. that are innovation core sites. Congratulations to Iowa State. In today's Tribune, what you will read when you get it in the mail later today, Iowa State University's enrollment has gone down this year after hitting a record high last year. Overall enrollment at ISU has slipped to 36,321 students, down 339 from the record high last year. It's the first decline after a decade of growth. ISU officials expected this to happen. Also in today's Tribune, the state of Iowa's Board of Regents heard an update yesterday on the university's search for a new president. Luis Rico Gutierrez, the dean of ISU's School of Design, who is co-chair of the search committee, said the group has cut down its list of candidates to 60. 6-0 candidates. That's a lot of candidates still. Search committee is going to meet again next week to reduce the list even more and then invite some of them, to face-to-face interviews on an off-campus location. None of the names of the candidates being released yet. And in today's Tribune, candidates for the Ames School Board election took part in yet another candidate forum last night. The third one in the past few weeks took place at the school district office sponsored by the Tribune. Among the topics last night, trust issues between the public and the school board, the new collective bargaining law, and the candidates' first priorities if they're elected. You can read all about it in today's Trib. Very briefly, last night, this is not in the Tribune, but a salute to Ames Mayor Ann Campbell, her valedictory. She's retiring this year after decades of public service. She spoke at the Ames Public Library to a packed house. She was witty, she was reflective, and she spoke with confidence about her role as mayor and earlier as a city council member. She spoke about gender, saying she hoped no one ever voted for her or against her because she is a woman. She said running for public office was never on her horizon, but she did. She was very effective. 16 years on the council, 12 as mayor, 30 years. Working for the city of Ames. And she had the crowd laughing when she said it's amazing how popular a person becomes as she is heading out the door. I find that to be the case when I head out the door here on Friday mornings. People applaud when I leave. Taking a quick look around at other newspapers, the Nevada Journal this week. Jean Nolan of Nevada had been planning to drive to Kansas City last weekend to deliver a car to her daughter, Allison Backus, who had recently moved to Houston and who was flying into Kansas City to pick up the car. Well, Jean Nolan got this great idea to pack the car with clothes, blankets, baby diapers, pillows, other things, so that her daughter could then drive that car back to Houston and deliver the goods to those affected by the terrible flooding caused by Hurricane Harvey. And that's just what happened. Jean Nolan got a lot of donations. She drove down to Kansas City, and her daughter drove that car to Houston and delivered those goods. Thank you, Jean Nolan. Iowa State fraternity and sorority members, also in the Nevada Journal, about 130 of them, took part in the recent Lincoln Highway Days parade in Nevada, all for a good cause. Members of the Farmhouse fraternity and the Delta Zeta sorority walked in the parade and passed out 5,500 informational bookmarks that detailed the symptoms of ovarian cancer. One of those who took part, Josh Schmitz, whose stepmom passed away from ovarian cancer 6 years ago, he said his group provided a lot of positivity and excitement throughout the parade route. Good for you folks. The Boone Republican News. Big story. The Boone Speedway celebrated its 50th anniversary last Saturday night, and more than 100 people were there to see it. Speedway opening up in 1967 and has operated as an independent track, as well as under sanction agreements with NASCAR in the 1980s and with the IMCA, the International Motor Contest Association, since then. It's been the home of the IMCA Super Nationals for a long time now, and those are taking place at that speedway all this week. Boone City Council has set a public hearing for September 18th on a request by Fairway Stores to have the city give up its rights to buy some land owned by Fairway. Seems that back in 2011, there was talk of an overpass that was going to be built over the railroad tracks on land owned by that store. The city had the right to buy that land, but that overpass project has been moved to the east, so the city no longer needs Fairway's land. One more story from the Boone Republican. Heartwarming story. The First United Methodist Church in Boone recently held its second annual Critter Sunday. Nearly 50 pets, including cats, dogs, a miniature goat, some cows, were blessed as part of a special service held in the church's fellowship hall. Congregation members were asked either to provide the church with a picture of their pets or to bring the pets to church. This is the second year of the event. And quickly, the Story City Herald. Big story? Well, as you might guess, school board election set for next Tuesday. The Roland Story School District has two candidates running unopposed for two at-large seats on the board. Michaela Carlson seeking re-election, first elected to the board 4 years ago. Newcomer Tommy Hansen running for the other seat, being vacated by Boyd Brody, who was first elected in 2006 and decided not to seek re-election. The election, a reminder, next Tuesday. Deadline for requesting a mailed absentee ballot is today, and they must be postmarked no later than this coming Monday to be counted. And, Gail, there you have it. There's your rundown of some of the major stories from our newspapers from around the area. And are you going to applaud me as I leave? A lot of people are popular when they leave.
You're always popular with us on Friday mornings, Dennis. Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure.
You pack a lot in there. I feel like I'm updated now.
Well, you know what? Let's do it again next Friday. What do you say? You and
I together. Sounds good.
Have a great weekend.
You too. That's been the Weekly News Roundup with Dennis Hart, which you can hear every Friday on Local Talk on KHOI. This is Local Talk on KHOI, and that was Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles, which is a perfect song for our next segment. We welcome a team from the College of Engineering that's been working on the design of solar cars, or more accurately, I think this is right, solar-assisted electric vehicles. Is that the right term?
Yep.
Okay, I got that from your website. They are called Team PRISM, which is spelled P-R-I-S-U-M, so they get the I-S-U in the middle. And let me introduce them. We've got Emmanuel Agba, a senior lecturer in mechanical engineering. Good morning.
Good morning, Gail.
And you've brought with you several students who are on Team PRISM, and they're Matt Good. Matt, yeah?
Good morning.
Okay, and Dylan Neal.
Good morning, a pleasure.
And Mackenzie Klima?
Klima. Good morning.
Okay, great. So, Emmanuel, let's start with you. Thank you all for being here. Mm-hmm. How long has Team PRISM been working on solar cars? And how? Because you've built some before the one you have now,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The team started around 1989 as a project in Tau Beta Pi. Then it transformed into a club where students actually build solar cars. Since then, they have built up to about 13 solar cars. The 14th one is what's called Penumbra. That is going to go into Australia.
Uh-huh.
You know, so they've been doing this. They've been racing across the United States. They go to two races and this is the first time they're actually going out of the country. If we don't count Canada, right? They've been to Canada before, but this is the first time they're actually crossing the Atlantic.
So off the ocean and heading out to a different continent.
It's going to another continent to actually race.
And how many people are on the team? So it is a club now.
It's a club, right. Right now, you have, I checked recently, you have about 39 people who are waiting to be members, and there is up to about 150 registered members right now.
Wow.
Which kind of increased, I would say, probably 2-3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
You know, used to be about 50 members. I used to know their names.
Uh-huh.
Now I just know the leaders nowadays because there are so many of them. Yeah.
So your role is to kind of coordinate all the efforts?
Yeah, I'm the advisor. And my first role is to know what they are doing, right? So I have to be engaged with the team, help them with planning of their events and activities. Attend meetings when necessary, go to events with them when necessary. I'm also part of my job is to explain the university policies and procedures to them to make sure that we are all doing things the right way we're supposed to be doing them. I provide support, right, when we agree on their project of objective, right. But part of my job is to make sure they have the right support they need to actually achieve their goals. Right now, the new team comes in every year.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, the next team is actually there, and I'm meeting with them already, starting last week, right? We started meeting, talking about what we're going to do next.
Mm-hmm.
Once we agree on what they're going to be working on, part of my job is to make sure they have all the resources, which we're getting from university, College of Engineering, mm-hmm. Risk Management, transportation, and of course, College of Education. We get members from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Go in and make sure that those goals are achieved.
Okay, yeah. Wow. Yeah. So I didn't realize it involved that many people and that much coordination. So let's talk with the students now. So I'm curious, how or why did each of you get involved in this project? Mackenzie, let's start with you.
Yep, I'm an interesting case. People usually ask me how I became a part of this team because it is primarily an engineering club, although we are trying to add lots of diversity through all the colleges, all the different colleges and different majors and things. But I found them at Clubfest my freshman year, and I went up to them and I said, "What is this?" And they said, "Oh, it's a solar car." And they were explaining it to me. And they said, "Oh, what's your major?" And I said, "Well, elementary education. You guys don't need me. I'll just go find another club." And they all went, "No, we need you." So my position on the team is I'm outreach director. So we do a lot of outreach. It's very important to us. Part of our mission as a team is to educate the community and especially students about what we do as a team. We really stress sustainability and environmental things like that and the future of transportation. And especially since there's such a huge push for STEM education right now, it's such a cool thing to be a part of. And I'm so glad that I found this and that all these people are so awesome and inclusive. And we're becoming a really diverse team, so it's really nice to see.
That's fascinating. Maybe someday when you're an elementary teacher, you'll involve your students in a smaller scale project of developing something like this.
Absolutely. I have so many ideas for things like that.
Yeah, wonderful.
So, yep.
And that's great that they were so welcoming that the group is so welcoming to students from all parts of campus and colleges and majors. And
absolutely.
Cool. All right, Matt. How about you?
So I actually had the opportunity to come to Iowa State when I was in middle school for OPTAG program. So it's like advanced placement for kids that want to do like engineering, robotics and stuff like that. So my mom signed me up for it and kind of drug me to campus. I didn't want to spend my summer days here. But the teacher for the course was absolutely amazing. And he just happened to be the advisor for the solar car team. So he toured us through. And I toured through the shop. My eyes got all big and googly-eyed. And I said, "This is what I'm doing when I go to college." Period. So I only applied to schools with solar car teams. Iowa State accepted me. And that was the only one. So it made the choice pretty easy. So came to Iowa State. And since day one, I've been working on the program.
Wow. Commitment.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Dylan.
So I am actually from St. Louis, Missouri, and I came to Iowa State because of the people of Iowa. I was just amazed at how friendly and how everyone wants to talk to anybody, and that's just kind of the person I am. So I found myself on Iowa State's campus. I said I wanted to make a difference in the world. I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I felt like Iowa State was the best place that I could accomplish that goal. So much like Matt, I walked up to the Solar Car team on the first day. I set foot on campus and said, where is the office and where do I start? And so they said, that's great, and follow us. So I've been with the program ever since that point. So this is my this is going to my fifth year on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And are you an engineering major?
I am. So I'm a mechanical engineer by major.
Yeah. Okay. And Matt?
I'm a materials engineer by major.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about the current car now. The name of that car is, say the name again.
Spenumbra.
Spenumbra?
Penumbra.
Penumbra. Penumbra. Yeah. Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about it and the competition that it's entered in?
So really the coolest thing about Penumbra is it is the world's first solar utility vehicle. There is no other car like it on the entire globe. The students at Iowa State have built the first practical solar car that you could take on a date, go grocery shopping with, take the family out to dinner. It's just built to be your normal everyday car, but at the same time powered off the sun. So if you look at all of our previous cars, they're one seat, streamlined. How do you get from point A to point B the fastest? But now let's plug in our phone, have a phone call in the car with our wireless, phone call, pull up Google Maps and make sure we can get to our destination properly. So it's not only a design of engineering of lightweight materials, aerodynamics. It's more of a design of, how do I interface with people to make our music selection very entertaining? Where's the best placement for cup holders? What kind of cups do we need to put in here? Do we need the mega gulp cups or do we need coffee cups with mugs and handles? And all these new design constraints that we never had to worry about. And that's where a diverse group of individuals is needed. Because I'm from Iowa. I care about how much cargo can I put in the back? Can I put 2x4s in here from Menards? In St. Louis, that's not necessarily the same constraints of a car. So you just get all these different thought processes going into the car. And the product that you make, I think, is pretty revolutionary because it's something you don't see on the road today. But at the same time, it's still relatable. It's not a far-off concept. And we toured around the state in what's called Sunrun, and kids throughout the entire state. We went to all 99 counties, and they're all like, I'm going to drive this.
You drove this car?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so a big outreach thing that Kenzie worked on was the all 99 county tour. And kids are just like, I want to drive this when I'm older.
You're a great salesman for it as well. I love.
Just wait till Dylan comes on.
Okay. All right. So you have this car, unlike any that you've made before or that other people have made, and you're going to enter it into a competition in Australia. Has it already gone?
That is correct. So Penumbra is actually on her way to Australia right now. She is flying across the ocean as we speak. So she shipped out in a shipping crate sponsored by the Boeing company, actually, last Thursday. So all of our materials, our supplies are on their way to Australia. And then our team, a team of 15 members, will be going down to the land down under next Thursday.
Wow, that is exciting. And what will the competition be like?
So it's named the Bridgestone World Solar Challenge. So we're going to be competing against 43 teams from across the world, from over 30 different countries. There's about 11 that compete in what we call the cruiser class. So as Matt talked about, a practical solar car. There's a bunch of teams from across the globe who are doing the same thing. And so what the challenge is, can you make it across a continent? How many people can you drive with? And how many times did you have to charge? And so 80% of your score is just based on that. Is it an efficient car? Can you take a lot of people across, thousands of miles without having to charge? Which is a big thing with electric vehicles right now is how far can you go?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole design of the competition. And then 20% of your score is that practicality. So the judges don't tell us what is going to happen, who's going to get in there, but there's going to be random individuals that sit inside every car and look at, what are the cup holders like? How is the materials on the inside of the car?
What does it feel like?
What does it feel like? Are your seats comfortable? All those, those little creature comforts that everyone will care about in your standard, if you go to an auto, you know, you go buy a car, you're going to sit in these, you're going to say, okay, I like this. And that could be the decision between whether you buy that car or not.
Uh-huh.
So it really challenged us, and it challenges all these different teams from across the world to really pick their brains on what is something that a consumer would actually want in a standard day-to-day operation.
And so for people who – obviously this is the radio and not everyone – I've actually seen the car because it was parked outside one day near the parking lot that I park in. And so I stopped and looked at it and talked to the person who was out there. It wasn't one of you, was it? No.
We were both there.
Yeah.
And you talked to me?
I'm not sure if we talked to you specifically, but there was a lot of people there.
Oh, okay. No, this was one day, and there was one person out there, and I was the only person gathering. Someone was just out there doing
In front of MSO?
Whatever. By the garage.
You know, they give tours all the time, so if you want to stop by one time and just get a tour of the facility.
So other people if our listeners are curious, they could come by and see
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
So describe an exterior view of the car so people can imagine it, because it's interesting, like where the solar collectors are and that kind of thing.
Sure. So when you look at the car, if you look at it in the right way, it kind of looks like a boat because it has these big, you know, pontoon looking things on the bottom. But if you take from a, you know, external view and you're kind of looking down on it, it looks basically like an SUV.
Uh-huh.
So it looks – we designed it as a hatchback. So it's, you know, your hot hatchback is, you know, sometimes what I refer to it as. So it's got four doors. Your solar panels are on the hood and then the roof. And, you know, the best way to describe it is it looks a lot like your standard car. But you can't see the wheels. So the wheels are covered up, and that's for aerodynamic purposes. So your wheels are able to turn within these covered areas of the car.
Mm-hmm. And – so do you see this as – in terms of the long-term goal of this work, do you actually see this as contributing to the development of possible commercial vehicles that are solar-powered?
Yes, kind of without a doubt. Mm-hmm. The coolest thing is when we go on these like outreach events, you have to get someone excited by the idea, and that's what concept vehicles do. When Ford and GM make a concept vehicle – they get the public excited about the new technologies coming out. Well, it's a little bit different when kids are doing it, because then the people are saying, well, if kids can do this, why aren't automotive manufacturers doing this? Why aren't we actually making it? And we actually start building people that want to purchase these cars long term. And there's several kids throughout the state that all want to only drive solar cars when they grow up. They want a solar car to be their first car, and they only want to drive renewable cars as a future. They understand the need for the car, and by seeing Penumbra, sitting in Penumbra, plugging in their phone, listening to music, they understand that this car is real and it is coming. So I think it's only a matter of time. And actually, the team went to General Motors in Detroit, and that was a super awesome trip. And they were all kind of very interested by the car because it looks like a regular car, and students built it. So then they start asking themselves, well, why can't we do this? So we're getting a lot of interesting looks from the automotive industry in general. So it's just an exciting time.
The whole idea is, and if you look on our website, it's part of our mission statement, but we want to change a paradigm. So it's not just, you know, we go to campus and we go every day and we work on a solar car. It's we go to the community, we go to the industry, and we change everyone's mindset about what is actually possible and what's doable.
So, Gail, if you go to the website of the team, and anybody who is listening to this show can go to the website.
And we'll put a link to that on our website.
Yeah. You're going to see images of the past solar cars, the 13 solar cars.
Okay.
They are all kind of flat panel with three wheels, some of them are four wheels, one passenger.
Mm-hmm.
So this time we actually make a big transition to a four-wheel, totally driven by the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So this is actually to make a statement about sustainability transportation. That it's time we change. It's time. It's doable. We can actually build a car that will at least get some percentage of energy from the sun, right, to power that vehicle across for everyday uses.
And that the car can still be relatively comfortable and familiar
comfortable.
To us.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, Mackenzie, in terms of that, you know, changing the paradigm and kind of changing people's way of thinking and their expectations starting when they're young, I imagine that you see the role. There's a role for schools and teachers in being involved in that as well.
Absolutely. I think it's very important for teachers to be educated on all the new technology that's out there so that they can inform their students, hey, this is your future. And when we go to outreach events and we bring the car and you see their little faces light up when they're like, this is a car? This is so cool. It only runs on the sun? And explaining that to them, and then you just see them start to understand, and it just gets their little minds working about, oh, well, when I go to Iowa State, I want to work on the solar car team, and I want my mom to drive a solar car. And it's so amazing. It's just a snowball effect of community outreach that we do, and it's just so awesome to be part of that experience.
And in thinking about why we don't already have cars like this, is it the technology that's not readily available and usable, or is it like people's mindsets, including the automotive industry, that hasn't really focused on developing cars like this yet?
So it's a little bit of both, okay. If you think about it. So electric vehicles so GM tried to develop a car that was called the EV1. So some of the listeners may, you know the concept of the EV1, but then that kind of died off. So and then we're using standard diesel, petrol, cars ever, since that point. And then think about Mr. Elon Musk, the big name out there right now, Tesla. What's a Tesla? So it's a fully electric car that can go really fast and could go really long distances. Wow, that's such a paradigm shift. And if you think about that, that was just one guy that had a dream that he was going to create a sustainable world, and he just went out and did that, And he had that mindset that he was going to change everyone else's mindsets too. So, then it started to say, the general automakers of the world saying, well, why aren't we doing that? The market is interested in electric vehicles now. We better start developing electric vehicles. And then you get into that same kind of snowball effect, kind of like what Kenzie's talking about, from the younger generations, but now it's just within the actual economic market. So really, as solar technology starts to catch up, because our cells are about 25% efficient, which is incredibly efficient for a solar cell. And as the technology becomes more efficient, more durable, more readily available, cost effective, that's when you start breeding these, a perfect junction between what's available in the market and then what people in the market actually want to use.
Okay. Well, this has been really interesting to me. I mean, I'm excited about it, but even more importantly, I'm hopeful. The fact that there are amazing young people like this working on trying to change our way of thinking about cars and what we expect and want from cars is hopeful, because there's really a need for that.
There is. Yeah.
Yeah. And you must be very proud to have this amazing group. If they're any indication of the rest of the team, they're pretty impressive.
Yeah, I would say I'm proud, but I also feel like I'm lucky too to be working with them, because when I came here in 2010, I think I was just at the right place at the right time, because they are looking for an advisor and I was around, right? And
great, yeah. Well, thank you all for coming in today. We really appreciate it. And are you all going to Australia, some of you?
Matt and myself will be part of the team that's going to Australia, and then 13 other members.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good
and
luck.
Of course, they have other advisors going with them.
Going with them, yeah. Right. You're not just sending them there on their own.
No, can't do that.
Well, good luck. Good luck. And thank you all for being with us. I've been talking with Emmanuel Agba, who is the advisor for Team Prism, and several students, Matt Good, Dylan Neal, and Mackenzie Klima. Thank you.
Thank you for the time to mention.
That was Let the Sunshine In by Aquarius, a perfect song for a sunny day like today. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI, and we've been joined in the studio by Mary Rankin, the Director of Sustainability at ISU, and she brought some other guests with her. So we have Robert Valick and Erica Rodbell. Thanks
Good
for
morning.
Being here, all of you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And Robert and Erica are members of the Sustainable Agricultural Student Association. And Mary, I'm going to let you tell why you brought them today.
Of course, of course. Well, I tell you, there's something about fall and food. I don't know if you feel it, but I certainly do. We, at this time of the year, bringing in different things from our garden, you know, the last of the
crop harvest.
From the garden. Right,
yeah.
The harvest season, it's happening in the fields. We see these wonderful types of fall produce up here at the farmer's market. And as the weather gets colder, we start thinking about all those wonderful things we want to make with food.
Mm-hmm.
And so my guests have done this really very cool thing. They are the co-chairs of the first annual. I don't know. We'll see how the event goes as far as making it an annual event. But anyway, the first Harvest Fest that is happening in the community actually this evening. And I wanted to bring them on to
Perfect.
Talk about this really, really fun event that they have planned. So Robert and Erica, we were having a chance to talk before we came on the air, and you guys were telling me all of the effort you've put into this incredible event. So first of all, talk about Harvest Fest. What is the event,
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
what was the inspiration to get it started?
Okay.
Okay. So Harvest Fest has been mentioned a fair bit.
You mentioned the last 3 years.
Yeah.
You guys have
the last
been talking about it, right?
We've been talking
yeah.
about it.
So it's a dream in the making.
Right. So I recently, well, within the last year, I started at ISU. And within the first 2 weeks of joining the Student Organic Farm, it's been renamed since, but at that point
sure.
in time, that's
yeah.
what it was referred to. A friend of mine, Adam Wright, who was at the time the co-president of SASA, mentioned it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this really great image of what it would be like.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he offered me the co-presidentship, when he stepped down, that was the number one thing on my agenda was
That's
to make
fantastic.
This event a reality.
And can you explain what SASA is? I think I know, but just for our listeners.
So it's a student association. And our idea
around sustainable
So SASA is primarily composed of graduate students in the sustainable agriculture program at ISU, but not entirely. We're open to other students. We're probably about 75% SUSAG students, and then the rest are graduate students from other programs, and then a couple undergraduates who have kind of jumped along into our community with us. So.
Okay. Yeah. And so is it fair to say one of the things there are many things I love about SASA, but I think is it fair to say if you talk about a mission, would it be connecting people to food, food security? How would you describe the mission of SASA? Because I think that really lends nicely to the event.
Yeah. Oh, man, there's so many different ways we could go with this. But because sustainable agriculture is a very broad topic. I would say the mission is to increase the reach of sustainable agriculture.
Sure.
And that is in and of itself kind of a vague definition, but we're keeping it vague so that we can include it, people with different views of sustainable agriculture because of how broad that term is.
Of course. Well, sustainability in general is very broad as well.
As you would know.
And yet has so many connections, and you also want to ensure that you are effectively embracing all of those different connections. So,
Indeed. That's great.
And so SASA has some interesting things that they've done in the past years that I've been connected to. Of course, you help manage some community gardens.
Yep.
You also volunteer. You guys are regular volunteers with Food at First. So connecting people to good food and spreading information about different types of agriculture and different ways of approaching sustainability within our food systems. Is that fair to say?
Oh, definitely. Yes.
Oh, great. Yeah. Fantastic. So Harvest Fest is going to be connecting folks to food.
Yes.
Yep.
How is that going to happen? What sorts of connections?
So Harvest Fest was designed primarily to raise awareness for the local food system of Ames, Iowa.
All right. Great.
So one of the first people that I reached out to or the first organizations was PFI.
Okay.
And so
Practical Farmers of Iowa.
Mm-hmm. And immediately they were interested in participating.
Fantastic.
And so we have Joe Lynch of Onion Creek Farm. He's willing to give a talk at this event tonight. We also have Lacewing Acres, which is nearby the event. And they will be having farm tours every hour on the hour.
Oh, very fun. Mm-hmm. Very fun. Excellent. And, of course, talking about CSA's community-supported agriculture and different ways that folks can connect to local foods without necessarily having to have their own farm or their own even garden necessarily, that they can connect to great to great foods. So the event is taking place tonight.
Yep.
What are the hours and what's the location?
Yeah. So it is running from 4:30 to 9 p.m.
Okay.
And it is taking place next to Alluvial Brewery in the northwest corner of Ames. It is like right next to Alluvial Brewery so that we can utilize some of their infrastructure. But also Lacewing Acres is right there as well. So part of what we're going to have at the event is every hour there's going to be farm tours of Lacewing Acres right there. So if anyone is interested in what a CSA farm looks like, this is an opportunity for them to learn about that and actually get a tour of that type of farm.
That's great.
And will there be actually food to eat?
Oh, yes. We have we're going to have a couple different food booths. I think the count now is at 8 different dishes that are going to be there, ranging everywhere from like snack food, like roasted corn, grilled corn. Mm-hmm. We are in Iowa, so we are definitely having grilled corn. Full out entrees. I am being a little vague on what exactly the entrees are because the chefs haven't quite given us a name.
We mentioned so, it's like a MasterChef mystery box. Okay,
yes.
I like it.
And we have to talk about the pies. You guys have a personal connection to these pies you told me about.
Yep. So that's what I did yesterday. I baked about 300 small individual muffin-sized pies. That was...
And the baked those. Wow.
Right. And the types of pies?
Oh, mixed berry and pumpkin.
Okay. And tell us about the berries.
Oh, so...
Did you go buy them?
No, we did not. We got them from Berry Patch. And Robert and I actually spent a couple hours picking them.
Yeah. So all the berries, so actually we did buy them. But
I understand.
But you didn't steal them.
No, we did not, no, we didn't sneak out there and just steal
them. But you handpicked them.
Yes. Okay.
That's such a great story. So all the ingredients going into the foods that will be available this evening, and I understand there's going to be fresh baked bread as well.
Yes.
That sounds delicious. And various appetizers. All of those ingredients are from our local food system, correct?
Just about all of them. I'd say the only thing that we're really kind of swaying on is like sometimes spices.
Oh, yes, of course.
But like all the core ingredients are from the local area.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And so is it the kind of event that people can just drop into at for a little while, or do they need to come like at the beginning and you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's pretty low key. You can drop in as you wish.
Okay.
We were trying to organize the event somewhat like how you would see a Oktoberfest going on in Germany, like a small version of that.
Mm-hmm.
So like you don't have to show up at the beginning and stay the whole time.
Okay.
You can show up for half an hour. You could stay for multiple hours. Starting at 6, we actually have live music going on for about 3 hours.
Uh-huh.
So if you – like I'm imagining a lot of people will probably show up and get food, listen to the music, go on a farm tour if they want, but – you can make it any length of time you wish.
Okay. And there'll also be the tours and talks and like Joe Lynch, who's on the board of directors of KHOI.
Sure.
Will be one of the people speaking about his farm and his efforts.
And some wonderful local artists coming as well to provide the music. So that adds a nice, lovely local connection.
Yep.
If folks want to purchase food, they can do that. The food will be for sale.
Yep.
And also if folks want to pop into Alluvial, they can enjoy refreshments that way. But but that is a choice. Otherwise, it's family friendly. It's under 21 friendly.
Indeed.
So it's not, it's an event you can, choose to have over 21 activities, but it's definitely not centered around that.
It sounds like it'll be a great location for an outdoor event, and the evening looks to be a beautiful early September evening.
We've been watching the weather forecast
but it looks good. I think there's another event that you want to tell us about,
I just wanted to briefly mention, that the local food festival, we were on last year talking about that, if you recall, and we're excited that we're offering it again at Iowa State University this year. It'll be our third annual one, so the event has grown nicely, which I'm hoping Harvest Fest does as well. But anyway, we are having it on September 19th. It will be from 9:30 to 1:30 on the Central Campus Lawn between Curtis and Beardshire, right along that sidewalk. We've got over 30 different organizations and vendors coming this year. So not only do we have a lot of local producers coming, we have organizations that carry local products and use local products and foods within the work that they do. And we also have a number of different organizations that help increase awareness about our local food community and our connection to food that will be there as well. And I know that SASA is going to be at the event, we're very excited to have them there. And just a real wonderful variety of folks coming. ISU Dining will be creating some different dishes and sampling them based upon the types of foods that we are enjoying right now and that we have available in our community. So there'll be samples from a number of different vendors, and then there will also be products and produce for sale that people can purchase if they would like to take those. To our first 1,000 participants, we are offering some reusable bags so that they can use shopping at the event as well as taking after.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that we've got a really exciting local food that most people don't think about, I think, on tap. Ames Water is going to be at our event. Refilling water bottles. I'll have the water truck there. And that's a really wonderful, very tasty local food that I don't think that we think about that we're very fortunate to have in our community.
A local beverage.
Yes, a local beverage. That's very sustaining, right?
Yeah,
it's important to have that.
So that event is on campus. The one tonight is off campus, but anyone is welcome to
Absolutely.
Come to both of them.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. We look forward to that. And for more information on both of the events, if folks want to go to the Live Green website, livegreen.iastate.edu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And thanks to all of you for coming in. We've been talking with Mary Rankin, Robert Valick, and Erica Rodbell about the Local Food Festival and Harvest Fest. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to Dennis Hart for the weekly news roundup, to Emmanuel Agba and the Prism Solar Car Team, and to Mary Rankin for her monthly sustainability segment. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor, and our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. Local Talk is also a radio production training workshop, which means you can be part of our team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you would like to join the team, contact us at the station. And remember to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.